Welcome to Vegas World. It's time to party, and I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for joining me. We were MIA last week, but we are back with a vengeance. I'm going to give you my review of the last three episodes of the Penguin series, especially the finale. But before we get there, let's get into some movie news that's popped up in the last week, shall we? One that, if you listened to last week's episode, you know I'm not looking forward to. Zack Snyder has another movie coming out to Netflix pretty soon. And it's not going to be a continuation of Rebel Moon. No, this will be a grounded action thriller centered around an elite LAPD unit that is relentlessly confronted with the unforgiving collision of law and morality. It is going to be co-written with his frequent collaborator, Kurt Johnston of 300 and Rebel Moon, famously. And he will be directing it, obviously. I have zero hopes for this movie. If you've seen his work with Sucker Punch and how it was supposed to be a critique of the male gaze and how Hollywood treats women, you know, he's not going to be able to stick the landing on this. He thinks he's an intellectual, but he is a empty-headed frat bro to the max. He makes pretty visuals, don't get me wrong. But him writing a story that's supposed to be as complex as this, yeah, it will not be very good at all. So, not looking forward to that. And moving on to another person who I'm not too keen on having a franchise. Lucasfilms has announced they have tapped Simon Kinberg to write and produce a new trilogy. Rumors have been circulating around that this will be a continuation of the Skywalker saga, and I pray to God that is false, because the last thing we need is for them to bastardize the Skywalker saga anymore. The sequel trilogy was a disaster, especially because you didn't have one singular voice. You flip-flopped between J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson, and then back to J.J. Abrams, who ignored everything from that second movie in the trilogy. Finn was sidelined, and John Boyega pretty much intimated that he didn't want anything to do with the Skywalker Star Wars saga anymore, and that probably Disney as a whole, which, I don't know, maybe if they load the Brinks trucks to his house and give him a promising story for Finn, that could change. I don't know. But Simon Kinberg, he was a part of Star Wars Rebels, so he has history with the franchise. However, his movie filmography as a writer is spotty or just downright bad, if we're being brutally honest. Let's talk about it, shall we? He wrote XXX State of the Union. That's the Ice Cube sequel to the XXX movie, because Vin Diesel didn't want to come back. He wrote X-Men The Last Stand. Jumper, not very good. Sherlock Holmes, I enjoyed that. Days of Future Past, that was a good one. X-Men Apocalypse, forgettable. Dark Phoenix, he wrote and directed that. Now, mind you, he wrote X-Men The Last Stand. He already tried to do the Dark Phoenix saga already. He bungled that there. Why, oh why, as a studio, would you give it back to him to try it again if the first time didn't work? I don't think he's going to do well the second time. But then again, it's like, oh, I'm directing now. Maybe it'll be different. No, it was not different. It was just as bad, if not worse, than that movie. Not the guy I necessarily would want to helm or write a trilogy for Star Wars, especially when a lot of Star Wars projects has been very divisive. You want a out-of-the-park home run with these. I feel like I'm saying this a lot, especially like how Disney is dealing with Marvel, but yeah. Simon Kinberg, I don't have faith in you at all either. So it remains to be seen. There's talks of Daisy Ridley getting her own set of movies, or she's going to be, or her Rey character is going to be a more bigger part of the Star Wars universe. There's speculated that she is going to be like an Obi-Wan type of character, and maybe in the future, I wouldn't mind that, but like, Even her sequel trilogy wasn't necessarily about her. So why don't we have a movie that focuses more on Rey, shall we? Solely on Rey. Build her up to be what Luke Skywalker should have been post the original movies, because yeah, what they did with him in the sequel trilogy was garbage. And they tried to save face with him in The Mandalorian and all that, but the damage is done, folks. Let's not make the same mistakes twice, shall we? Now, to give a positive spin or a pro in all the cons I've just given you, Simon Kinberg was a co-creator and writer on Star Wars Rebels with David Filoni. So he has experience in this world. He knows the lore pretty well. And if another positive out of this is it's going to be one singular voice throughout the trilogy, that's something to, be happy about. However, his filmography, there's a lot more misses than hits, so it leaves me very cautious. Now, I'm not a big Star Wars fan, all right? I'll watch some of the movies. I've read novels or comics here and there, not a whole lot. If it's Darth Maul, Boba Fett, and maybe the occasional Luke Skywalker book, like I've got Shadow of the Sith right now that I'm reading, and they're trying to tie together Rey and Luke in between the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy. So that's kind of interesting, but I'm just putting into perspective that I am not the biggest Star Wars fan. And I'm not super invested in this, but I'll probably end up seeing it because it is a cultural phenomenon. But I won't be entirely sad if it's not very good. However, maybe I'll just be slightly disappointed because it would waste my time. Now, I did enjoy The Last Jedi when I first saw it, because again, I'm not deep into the lore and know every single fact about Star Wars. But when I watched the original trilogy, and then I watched back the sequel trilogy, and saw how they pretty much contradicted everything that was laid out before, and what is known through other pieces of lore that I am familiar with, it was kind of like I can understand why fans are upset. Now, we move on from things that I'm not too fond of and looking forward to something I am very excited about, and that is Predator Badlands, directed and written by Dan Trachtenberg. He was the writer and director on Prey, and he gave a little insight to Empire and what we could expect in this new movie, Badlands, which will be starring Elle Fanning. And he also said that the Predator will be the protagonist in this movie, the first time in this franchise where the Predator is the protagonist. Now, if you want to be super nerdy and technical about it, AVP, you can say, well, they were actually the good guys, and that, well, no, they were anti-heroes. Shut up, nerd. Secondly, the comics and the novels have kind of had a protagonist, but as far as the film go, the film franchise, this is the first time. And I am curious to see how Trachtenberg handles the Yautja. What the Yautja is what the predators are called in the comics and the novels. Yes, I am a Predator nerd a bit when it comes to that lore and franchise. I'm curious to see how, if he dives into that a bit more in this film and how he approaches it, whether we get spoken dialogue or they speak in the clicks and all that, but we get subtitles, or we're just gonna have no subtitles and we're just gonna have to figure out what's going on in the story in terms of body language, demeanor and all that, and how they might present that. But he gave this quote to Empire. He said, "The creature is front and center, leading the charge. He's still a badass, but there's something there that touches you emotionally too. Creating a character you connect with but are also super intimidated by has been challenging, but exciting." And with that, and with the news of all of this, I'm excited. I can't wait to see it. I wish it was out like right now. I've liked a lot of Dan Trachtenberg's work. I enjoyed his Portal: No Escape short film. I loved 10 Cloverfield Lane. I liked Prey, like I said, so that'll be a lot of fun. I can't wait for that. I'm hoping it's another hit for the franchise and it will continue on because they were in a bit of a slump for a while, you know. Predator 2, while looking back at it, it was a way better film than it was given credit for at the time. I think a lot of people just weren't happy that the fact that Arnold wasn't back. So, you know, we got Danny Glover instead, which was still a fun movie. You know, Predators was exceptional, or fine film. Robert Rodriguez had that in his back pocket since the 90s. That was fun. The Predator, the Shane Black movie, yeah, that was a swing and a miss, which derailed a lot of plans and also gave us Prey in a back-to-basics sort of film, which also got the general audience and fans excited and wanted to see more of that. Like, hey, let's put a Predator in feudal Japan. Let's put a Predator in World War II. Let's put a Predator in any scenario in history that deals with war and conflict or something. Give us it. I don't care. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Side note, I've been playing Predator's Hunting Ground, which is a fun online game where you can either play as the Predator or what they call the fire team, which is like the army who's got to complete a mission and the Predator's hunting you. That is really fun to play. I think I've lost many of hours over the last year playing that game. That isn't the only Predator movie coming out in 2025, by the way, Badlands. There's reportedly a secret Predator movie that's going to be an animated anthology with a lot of different storylines. One involving a samurai, another involving a pirate, and a couple other fun little things that they haven't, they've kept super close to the vest on that. Can't wait for that. I really want them to finally release the AVP anime that apparently was made a couple years ago and just locked away in some vault somewhere at Disney or wherever the hell, whoever owns this these rights right now. I hope we get to see it because that sounded really freaking awesome, and I want to see how bonkers that would be. Alien vs. Predator in anime form. The first two movies, the first movie, AVP movie, wasn't necessarily bad, in my opinion. It wasn't great. Requiem left a lot to be desired, and you couldn't see anything. And granted, it went back to being rated R, which was cool, but yeah, come on. Give us the AVP anime, Disney. Release the damn thing. Over the last couple of weeks, I said that this is perhaps one of the greatest crime dramas in history. And I thought maybe I was being a little too bold. However, after witnessing the finale of The Penguin, I think I can say comfortably that that is perhaps one of the best crime dramas ever produced. If you don't want spoilers, I will put a time code for this segment and when it ends for you to skip over, because I'm going to talk about some more things after this, and you can jump back into that. And you can come back to this part later. I'm going to get those time codes in the description. I'm going to give you a 5-second countdown because there's this story is just too good to just try to dance around. I did that for the first couple of episodes, but I really want to get into the nitty-gritty of this. So if you don't want to be spoiled, this will be your chance. I'm gonna give you a countdown. Ready? In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So episode 6, Gold Summit. Sal Maroney has escaped from prison. He was attempted to be, he was about to be killed, and he ended up killing the guy who was going to kill him, and he is staying with Sophia, and they're conducting business, and he treats her almost like a daughter of his own. It's a very interesting dynamic to see between the two of them. I wasn't expecting that. It's, I know they have similar interests. They want to get rid of Oz, and Sophia believes that the Triad will stay loyal to her. However, Sal, because they have Bliss, they're probably going to side with Oz. So to send a message to everybody in the city, they murder Oz's henchmen and distributors of Bliss. Which, again, Oz doesn't say too kind of. He knows he was expecting something to happen. But that doesn't deter him, however. You know, and Sophia and Sal break into his apartment trying to find something they could use against him. Sophia lets Sal know that his brothers are dead, his mother is dead, yet we all know that she's not dead. And that pisses off Sal because, you know, the Penguin murdered his wife and son, took everything that he cared about, and they have nothing to hold against him. However, in Sophia's snooping, she ends up finding a signed photo of Eve. Eve, I guess, is a singer slash prostitute or lady of the night, if we want to be a little more delicate with the words there. You know, we also see that Frances, Penguin's mother, her dementia is worsening. She's found in a bathtub in cold, cold water, and she must have been sitting there for hours, and Oz finds her, and she asks her son if her condition worsens anymore, that he promises to kill her, and he reluctantly agrees. And, you know, they're struggling right now because they're in Crown Point. It's one of the lower income areas of Gotham, and the power is out from the flooding that happened in The Batman when, you know, the Riddler flooded a big portion of Gotham City. So in order to get the power up and running, not only for his mother, who's, you know, alone in the dark, well, not necessarily alone all the time, but Vic is there, but they have no power, they're running off a generator, he threatens a councilman, and it's so funny how he is so nonchalant about hurting people. You know, he takes needle-nose pliers and jams it into Councilman Hattie's nose, and when he's done, he's like, "You relax, just your nose," and, you know, cleans off the blood, and, you know, he basically threatens him to turn on the power so he could, you know, get everything up and running. Squid, a gangbanger who had Vic initially try to steal the rims off of Oz's car, he wants in on the drug operation. Vic doesn't know what to do, and he mentions it to Oz and makes it clear that he's not welcome. Vic tells Squid later on that, hey, you know, it's not gonna work out. And, you know, Squid threatens him, you know, to either, you know, do this or I'm gonna go to Sophia and get you guys taken down because I know about that too. And Vic ends up killing him, which is a turning point because, you know, this is the first time Vic has ever killed anybody. And when he tells Oz about it later on, Oz says, hey, you did the right thing. And it gets easier from here. You know, so that was, and speaking from Oz, yeah, for him, I guess it's just like an old hat now. Violence is all he knows. The ends justify the means, and it gets him what he needs. And for him, yeah, it's gotten easier. He doesn't have any second thoughts about it. And he's, you know, he's been mentoring Vic. He considers Vic almost like a family, so to speak. So, you know, he consoles him just like, hey, but you did the right thing. You know, Sophia visits Oz, holds her at gunpoint. Eve is not necessarily afraid of what's going to happen to her. And she just asks that Sophia leaves the prostitutes alone and that she's not really going to disclose anything about Oz, and Oz is not going to come rescue her regardless of what happens. And Sophia lets Eve know that Oz was complicit in Carmine's hangman killings because he is the true hangman. And with this knowledge given to her, Eve reveals, you know, where Oz is hiding, and it's in Crown Point. Sophia spares her. And while all this is going on, like the title episode, this episode, The Gold Summit, Oz meets with gang leaders from around the city, trying to get them to cooperate with him in his fight against the Gigantes, the Maronis, and the Upper Elite, letting them know that, hey, you know, they look down on us, we're the small guys, they're only concerned with, you know, the rich and all that. If we want to take over the city, we gotta band together. And, you know, Zal of the Triads is not convinced of Oz's little speech due to his backstabbing nature. I mean, he worked for Sal, turned on him, worked for Carmine, killed Carmine's kids, broke away from the Carmine crime family and doing his own thing now. Like, he's got a checkered past. Everyone knows it. It's been something that's been brought up a lot in the show. But, you know, Oz says he does have a code, and he revealed he's the one who killed Alberto. He wants to take complete control of the city to undermine the wealthy citizens, and that if they want to have the power, they need to band together. And sure enough, the leaders all crack open their beers that he gave them. The electricity comes on at Crown Point, which alarms Francis. Vic consoles her. They start dancing. And, you know, she's happy, and Vic, you know, is complying. She's suffering from dementia. And unbeknownst to them, Sophia has entered the apartment with a crowbar and watching them dance. Now, man, that episode, that the way the episode ended, I was nervous for Oz's mother. Because, you know, Sophia is on the warpath, you know, she wants to take Oz down. She's not opposed to killing. I mean, she killed her entire family except for one little girl. So, you know, his mom, it might not be too well for her. Francis might not make it out of this one. Man, it was just a so good episode. Again, it just progressed everything. It showed Vic, while he is into this life, he still has a bit of his humanity left, that he felt remorse for killing Squid. Even though he knew it had to be done, and that was the only way to get out of that situation, because Squid was going to be a problem, and he wanted to protect Oz. I mean, he's come to his aid before, and, you know, Oz just pretty much brushing off, saying, "Hey, kid, you did the right thing." Strong, strong episode. But the follow-up, the next episode, the seventh episode, which was titled Top Hat, man, that episode was gut-wrenching to watch. You know, we kind of, again, we've been referenced to Oz's brothers in the past. We don't get a whole lot of information about them, but this, we finally find out what happens to them. And at the beginning of this episode, we see Oz is very attentive to his mother, Frances, who's working on a balance book of some sort of somebody's finances. Very busy, and he's wants to be around her. She's trying to dismiss him off, and whenever his brothers Jack and Benny show up and get attention from their mom, you can clearly see Oz is growing resentful of that, because he wants the attention for himself. You know, she gives a book to Jack and tells him to bring it to Rex Calabrese. You know, Rex has been mentioned earlier in the show, and glowingly, by Oz, about how he was beloved by the community and how he drove a very nice car, stuff like that. You know, Rex Calabrese takes the book and gives Jack $50. And the brothers, you know, they're walking down the street after that. They find themselves in the abandoned underground railways to play a game of flashlight tag. Jack and Benny to go to hide. They end up hiding in a overflow tunnel, trying to get Oz to come down. Oz is very trepidatious about it, very scared. He slips a little bit on the stairs. He gets angry and then locks his brothers in there and says, "Have fun getting out," and goes home. When he gets home, you know, his mom's like, "Hey, where's your brothers?" "Oh, they went to a movie and I decided to come home." So because it was the two of them, they start watching the movie Top Hat, starring Fred Astaire. And Oz is happy because he's got his mom to himself. And you kind of get the idea in this scene that he has no remorse for what his brother's being locked in, you know, the railway system, the underground overflow tunnel. And it's even worse due to the fact that it's raining. But it started to rain when they went into the underground railroad, and it just kept pouring and pouring and pouring. And they're trapped in there. They can't get out. So that's how we find out how they pass away. It's because Oz locked them down there. And it's unnerving, man. It's It's so unsettling how happy he seems and how he doesn't, you know, he doesn't ever mention, hey, you know, mom, I lied. They didn't go to a movies. They're locked down in the subway in an overflow tunnel. It's raining right now. They're probably gonna die. And it's so wild, man. And that's just the beginning. That's just at the beginning of the episode. There's a clear Oedipus complex going on with Oz and how much he loves his mother. I don't know. I mean, I know Oedipus complex talks about like a sexual desire a bit for a parental figure. I don't know necessarily if that's the case, but clearly he has a deep affection for his mother and he wants all the attention for himself. And with them gone, he finally gets it all. And since he's not going to tell her that they're down there, it seems like it's going to be like that for the rest of his life. Now, for a moment while watching this, I thought maybe he didn't necessarily realize what he did. He was just did it in the spur of the moment. You know, he killed Alberto Falcone on a whim because he was being insulted. And, you know, he thought his brothers were disrespecting him because he has a disability. So he didn't think he could make it down the steps to shine the light on them to get, you know, become not it anymore. But I don't know, with the smile and everything, when he's sitting there laying with his mom, it becomes very clear that that wasn't the case. You know, obviously we cut back to present day. Oz arrives back at Crown Point to find Vic unconscious and Francis gone. Vic informs him that Sophia took him and Sal's henchmen are coming to get him along with Sal, you know, and Oz forces Vic to flee. And then he gets beat up by Sal. Sal wants him to go to the base of operations. And then he'll get to see his mom. And with Francis in the custody, I guess, or being captured by Sophia, she has a breakdown. You know, she has a dementia episode where she's freaking out about the boys and that they should be out looking for them. And it's raining. They haven't been seen. You know, we need to do something. And she, you know, before that, though, you know, it's clear back and forth that Frances is a strong lady and she ain't taking none of Sophia's crap. And it's, you know, pretty much a chess match between the two and how, you know, she's like, hey, Oz is going to come back with a vengeance and he's going to get you. But, you know, at some point, she breaks down about the boys, and Dr. Rush comes in, who's become Sophia's lover, has informed her that Gia saw something, and she's going to consider talking to the police, and she's the only witness left to the Falcone's death. But yeah, man, beautiful scene between Francis and Sophia, and the natural progression to the dementia episode by Francis, and Sophia almost sympathetic to this woman's plight for what's going on, because she's trying to figure out what exactly happened, because she doesn't even know what happened to the boys, and Oz is very vague about his personal life. I mean, hell, Sophia didn't even know that his mom was still alive. He hid her far away from everything, I guess, you know, to avoid something like this from happening. But yeah, such a wonderful, wonderful scene. And then, you know, we cut back down to the underground railroad system where Oz has his base of operations. Sal proclaims that the business now belongs to him. They all work for him now. And Oz ends up provoking Sal to allow the distraction so his men can cut the lights and there's a big shootout. Oz and Sal fight in a subway car. And in this fight, Sal ends up having a heart attack. And Oz's reaction to this is hilarious. The fact that he's so incredulous that Sal is going to have a heart attack instead of being able to die by his hands. You know, in his last couple of breaths, Oz is like, look, I did this to you. I'm the one who took you out. Your history and it's everything is mine. And I'm taking everything you had and all your businesses, all your men, everything. It's the city is mine now. That was an unexpected moment. I didn't think that Sal was gonna end up suffering a heart attack it's kind of poetic, I guess, because he had such a big heart for his family and such. And there is a tender side to him, and his heart ends up being what takes him out in the end. Not the bullets, not the fighting, just his body breaking down. Magnificent scene. Beautifully done. I mean, this whole show, man. This whole show is so well done. But yeah, Colin Farrell's acting in that moment when he realizes what's going on, and he's just not happy about that, because this isn't how everything was supposed to go. And he was like, you're supposed to be the one who topples me, remember? You're supposed to put up a fight, and this is what happens? Really? Now, this next scene, for me, rivals the moment between Sophia and Francis. Sophia meets with Gia, and she wants to know what Gia might have seen, and Gia lets her know that she found a gas mask in her purse, and then asks her, did she kill the family, to which Sophia denies. And then she notices self-harm, like cuts on Gia's arm, and in an almost in a moment of truth, she lets Gia know that her family, the entire family, were bad people, and that their death is a blessing for Gia, because she will have a chance to live a better life far away from that family, and that this isn't her fault. She shouldn't do this to herself. And then she gets a phone call. And of course, she thinks it's Sal. Instead, it's Oz. And Oz offers her a choice. He offers her the Moroni crime empire, as well as his Bliss operation, in exchange for his mother. And of course, when Sophia gets back to the mansion, she lets Rush know that she's become disillusioned with her position after seeing the pain that Gia was in, and that in a way, she has done to Gia what her own father did to her by putting her in Arkham. So she's going to accept his deal. However, Rush convinces her to follow through with her desire to see Oz suffer. So, you know, it all seems like his things are going to go to plan. A van pulls up into the railway system. Oz's men are hiding, you know, ready to get the jump on her to take her out as well. He gets a phone call, and, you know, Sophia's like, I decided to do things a little differently. You thought you were going to get me. He opens the back of the van when she says she has a gift, and it looks as if it's Francis's body. And, you know, he gets very almost teary-eyed. He goes to pull the blanket off, and it reveals to be explosives. And he doesn't let his boys know anything at all. He just gets out of there, and it blows up. And, you know, it's the way they shot it, too, with, like, him opening the door and the light shining on to Sophia's face makes it seem like she's in the tunnel, but really she's out in Crown Point or somewhere in the city. We don't know it's Crown Point, but yeah, but, you know, she's out in actually above ground and nowhere near the Underground Railroads. And, you know, it kills his crew. And in the final flashback of the show, you know, his mom's locked away in her room. He goes to bring her food. She opens the door, and she's in, like, this sparkly black dress and tells them to get dressed up. They're going to go out. So they go to a jazz club. And in that club, you know, Oz tells his mother that he's going to be successful, or she encourages him to be successful and to provide her enough to lead a happy life. Oz promises, and the episode ends with Oz pulling himself out from the rubble and, like, you know, climbing out from the escape tunnel, and he's knocked out by a detective who's on Sophia's payroll. And that's how the episode ends. That was a wild way to end it. I was not expecting that explosion. Gotham, man, it just is a bad shape. A week before, I think, yeah, this only takes a week or so, a couple weeks before that, Gotham's flooded. Now there's a big bomb explosion. just wild stuff, you know. Sophia's like, I want out of this. I keep playing the game that my dad wanted me to play, and I want to do things my way. And for the most part, she's done that, especially with that attack. So beautifully done, man. The look, I mean, I thought it was going to be Francis in the back of that trunk. Like, I was like, oh, shit, what's this going to do to Oz, man? But nope, that's not how it happened. But like, when you see the bomb and the fact that he just left him, I mean, it's on point for Oz. Oz is all for self-preservation, obviously. I mean, if he did that to his brothers and killed other henchmen or killed Alberto, like, why would he give his other guys the heads up, in a sense? I mean, that's wild, though, especially when you give this whole speech on the upper guys in the top of the crime world and the other wealthy, they don't care about us. We gotta look out for each other, man. We're all we got. We gotta band together. And then he just leaves everybody high and dry to save himself. Now, the eighth episode in the season finale, entitled A Great or Little Thing. The way this episode kicks off is just tremendous, man. Dr. Rush uses EMDR therapy on Frances to have her relive her past. EMDR is a type of therapy, like it's a light, you know, that flashes in front of you and they make you, you know, kind of go through your trauma and try to help you feel and how they ask you to describe how it makes you feel and whatnot. Never done it myself. I've heard about it. I hear it's pretty intense. And the show uses that kind of form of that to get into this opening. And we see in a flashback of sorts that Rex Calabrese goes to visit Frances, you know, offers to pay for the funeral, and she dismisses it because she doesn't want sympathy from everybody and all that crap that goes with being the attention on that. And she basically lets Rex know that she found a flashlight in Oz's jacket and pretty much figures out that he's the reason that Jack and Benny are dead. And she doesn't know how to live with that. And she's trying to, like, she feels he's a monster. And Rex suggests two things to her. You take these traits that he has and you build it up and it could be beneficial in his line of work. And she could use his devotion and love for her, because normally when people come to Rex, they're missing a father and they need a father figure. He doesn't need, and Oz doesn't need that. He has the love of his mother and he will do anything his mother wants him to do. The alternative of that is he could, you know, disappear. And she, you know, pretty much asks, are you willing to do that sort of thing for me? Because she's not really necessarily sure she could do it herself, or, you know, if she necessarily wants him to live either. And it's also interesting in this, too, because in the previous episode, they use Emily Mead as the young Francis. But in this episode, we get the older, the current day actress playing the role of the young mom in the scenario. I guess it also ties in the fact that they're doing the EMDR treatment, and like she's, you know, in front of the lights, because at a certain point she ends up seeing Sophia and Dr. Rush in a booth in Monroe's when they're going out, because they kind of go off on that at the end of the last episode, and we get her perspective of that night in this. And it's really interesting. It's really cool to see that, how that plays out, and how, you know, for her to tell him to get dressed, we're going to go out, was her putting on an act about what could possibly happen. And while they're there, you know, Oz is all wrapped up in the night, and then he thinks that her look of what she feels, she's unsure of what she can really do, she's already planned to happen tonight. He takes it as her being coming out of her shell and, you know, finally, quote unquote, over the death of Jack and Benny. And he's like, I know you miss them, Mom. I miss them too. And I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to give you all the finest things in life. And before he really goes on to that speech, she mentions that, oh yeah, hey, Rex is here and Rex is going to bring you home for tonight, which lets us know that, yeah, she's going to do it. But once Oz gets into the whole speech about how he's going to give her everything she ever wants because he knows her better than anybody, he details all the ways, little things that she didn't think he would notice or someone his age would notice, but he does, and he sees her for who she is, which obviously sends her down the road of not killing her son and letting him growing up and using that tool. And that is just it was just a powerful scene, man. It's just, wow, the struggle the way the actress shows that inner turmoil of she misses Jack and Benny, but she loves her son Oz. I mean, it is her son, but she can't necessarily live with the fact that he let this happen, and that maybe if he would have said something, they might still be alive. They could have gotten help in some way, you know. Like, she even said when talking to Rex that the cops struggled to pry the door open, that there was no way they could get out, but if he would have said something to somebody, they could still be here. And then that was just really strong. And the fact that she, you know, exploits his unwavering, unhealthy devotion to her, and how he doesn't really see what's going on with her, and how she's not necessarily out of her funk, and that she's not necessarily reflecting on Jack and Benny. She's toiling with the idea that she's losing another child tonight. It's just, man, so superb. Superb writing, superb acting, and the way they blend, or they have the older actress playing the part instead of bringing back Emily Mead to play the young Frances. So good, and the way she almost snaps out of her therapy because, you know, in this hallucination, she sees Sophia and Dr. Rush, and he's trying to keep her in the moment to try to figure out, you know, the whole story and what they could possibly use against Oz. Man, just some gnarly, gnarly stuff. You know, after this flashback or EDMR session, we cut to Vic with deputies and leaders of the other gangs trying to get to the Underground Railway, because in the previous episode, you know, Oz is trying to call Vic and can't get a hold of him, and they get there to finally see that everything's, you know, blown up, and they think Oz is dead. They don't care if he's alive or dead because they were there for the product, not for him. And Vic, who's normally very shy, almost intimidated, and stutters a lot when he's really nervous, shows a lot of backbone and calls them all cowards and like, hey, Sophia and them wouldn't help y'all. And we got to do this for all of us and Oz. And, you know, Link punches him in the gut to try to pretty much save him and be like, hey, I get what you're saying, but you also got to know when to speak and when not to. And this is one of those times you just need to hush. And this next scene, oh man, when Oz, bound and gagged, gets, you know, the cloth, whatever, taken off to reveal he's in Monroe's and his mom's tied up, and Sophia tells him the tale about this baby birds and the mother bird and how the weakest one kills the biggest strong one, and the mom doesn't do anything about it, doesn't care, and basically telling Oz in a roundabout way that his mother knows what he did to his brothers, and the whole time he's denying it. And, you know, he tries to say that, oh, mom, you're confused, it's your disease talking, you don't really mean what you're saying. And then Francis just cuts all the bullshit and says, I know you did it. I knew this whole time. I never said anything about it. And then pretty much asks, you know, why did you have to take them away from me? They were my world. I could have loved you all equally. You didn't have to do what you did. And she pretty much says that she's hated him this entire time, that she can't stand the sight of him, and that she regrets being his mother and allowing him to live to become a monster. And then she breaks a bottle and stabs him in the gut. And it's just wild, man. It was like the whole way this scene goes. Like, I mean, for him to not even, I mean, they even threatened to take a cigar cutter and cut off her finger, and she's begging him to tell the truth, and he still won't do it. He doesn't know what she's talking about, and that there's nothing to say, blah, 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 blah. They just died. It was an accident, yada, yada. It's just wild. The fact that even then, he did not care what happened to his mom. That he claims he says he loves his mom, but apparently he doesn't love her enough to be honest about the whole thing when they're threatening to take her finger. So that was just so intense and just so beautiful. The confusion, like his whole world is shattered in that moment too, because he thinks his mother loves him, and like, you know, he made this promise to her that he's gonna be a success. You know, to get her all the finest things, all everything he's done in his life was in service of her, or so he's lied to himself and others to believe. And to see her just stab him, just utterly crazy. But in that moment, she stabs him and she starts to hallucinate Jack and Benny. And then she ends up having a traumatic seizure. And around this point, Oz is able to, you know, free himself from his binds, kills Sophia's henchman and escapes, taking, you know, his mom to the hospital. And then later on, Sophia gets all the leaders of the gangs and says, "Hey, I'll give you all my territory and everything in Gotham that belonged to Sal and everybody if you bring me Oz." And they're like, "What's the catch?" "There's no catch. I'm giving you everything. I'm giving you all the whole empire. It's all yours." And Link, you know, questions it. Why would you want to give all this up? Because he doesn't buy it. And she's just like, "I'm done. I'm done with all this. It's all you." And after all this, you know, Oz meets, goes up, shows up to City Hall and finds the councilman he threatened, Councilman Haiti, and pretty much, you know, spins the story about, hey, that was Sophia's underground empire. The drug trade, while the Bliss was being made, that was Maroni's actually. And Sophia is the one who killed Sal's wife and son, and she was the one who orchestrated the explosion. And hey, if you take her, you would be seen as the guy who put an end to the gang war in Crown Point. You're the one who helped them all. You're the one who got the power back. You did all of this stuff for the betterment of Gotham. This could propel you to, you know, mayor status and everything. This would be a huge coup for you. And in exchange for all of that, taking full credit and restoring order and peace to Crown Point, he gets access to influential people in council. And in this, he lets them know that, hey, the mayor's looking at all Falcone's associates, and you're one of them, and you got to appear clean in order to be able to get this kind of access. And while he's doing all this, Victor gets a call from Link, Zhao's deputy, the Zhao's late head of the triad, you know, the guy who punched Vic early in the episode. He's like, "Hey, man, you know, you Sophia's wanting to make a move. Where are you at? We got to do this real quick." So it's like, oh man, he's taking Vic for a ride. They're gonna turn over Oz and him to Sophia. It's it for them. You know, of course, when he comes out from the courthouse, him meeting Oz, you know, the triad's waiting for him. They get brought to an airstrip, and then, you know, it's pretty much feels like curtains over. It's all over for Oz, right? But then all the lieutenants start turning on all their leaders, and you know, Oz takes over. Oz gets Sophia in the car. You know, she thinks she's home free at this point. She's got Oz. She's, you know, get once she's done with him, she's out of here. She's out of Gotham. She's gonna start a life elsewhere. But nope. You know, he drives her down to, I guess, like the river or something like that, close to the bridge. And she's under the assumption that, you know, she's dead, and she's content with that. She's like, "Hey, all right, well, I mean, I get what I wanted, but I'm out of the race. And, you know, she kind of wonders while they drive over there, like, was he able to flip them all? And, you know, pretty much the same thing that he felt. It's like, yeah, you know, you guys undermined us. You guys think we're, you know, small time. And these guys felt the same way I did and made a move. So, you know, he pretty much alludes to the fact that he's going to kill her. But then, lo and behold, he doesn't kill her. The Gotham, the GCPD show up, and she's sent back to Arkham. You know, she's framed for the bombing downtown, the whole, you know, killing of Sal and his family and a bunch of other stuff. So, like, she's going back. She is dead. She's going back to Arkham Asylum. It's not a place she wants to be. And the most sad, somewhat sad thing, in a sense, is when he goes to the hospital with Vic to celebrate with his mom and doesn't realize she's, you know, comatose. Essentially, she's a vegetable now because the seizure was so bad. And he's wanting to hear that she's proud of him and everything that he promised her, he's gotten. And, you know, it's a win for him, but is it really? Because he doesn't have his mom anymore. Even though earlier in the episode, she's like, I wish I had killed you. You're a monster. You took everything from me, and, like, pretty much said her true feelings. You know, he doesn't see it that way, or I guess ignoring it, just like, oh, maybe she's just angry in the moment or whatever. But, like, his whole life was predicated on getting his mom the finer things in life and getting everything he wanted for her. And he's won, but he's still lost. And the unexpected part next, him and Vic are down by the river having a drink. Vic confides in Oz that, you know, he feels like family to him. And Oz tells him that he realizes now that having family or close attachment like that is a weakness. And he kills Vic. And it's like, oh, man, you know, when the show first started, it kind of felt like, all right, he'll probably kill Vic in an episode or two. But he kept him around trying to teach him the ropes and all that. Felt like he saw something in him, and, you know, it pretty much seemed like the relationship, he saw a lot of himself in Vic, and he was, you know, molding that and building him up, and at the end of all this, he kills him. It's just wild. And then the ending, what makes this even more of a gut punch, we see he's, you know, up in this apartment high rise, he's dressed up in a what could be considered a traditional penguin attire with a top hat and the vest and the three-piece suit, you know what I mean? He's got all that. And his mom is in a hospital bed staring out the window. He's got her there, and he's like, see, Mom, I got you the big high-rise that you wanted with the view. And then he goes to the next room, and Eve is there dressed in the same dress as his mother had when he made the promise that he was going to take care of her. And he has her play out this fantasy that she is his mom, and she says that she's proud of him, that she loves him, and he's, you know, her big man and all that stuff. And it's so sad and so creepy, this whole thing. Like, the fact that he's has this woman pretending to be his mom, playing out his Oedipus complex. And also the fact that he's got his mom in this place, and she's just, you know, she's a vegetable. She's going to have to live her days like that with him around like that in a position that I'm sure she really doesn't want to be in. And you get that sweet shot when they pan out from the apartment. You get the bat signal, which in a way I'm happy we didn't get Batman or Bruce Wayne in it. Matt Reeves said that there was an idea to get Bruce Wayne in the show in some way, but, like, there wasn't an organic way to do it, and I'm glad we didn't get that. I'm glad we just got the bat signal. That was a really cool way to do it. And also, it's interesting the fact that Sophia got a letter from Selina, who is her half-sister, while she's in Arkham, and it kind of gets her back to life. The one thing that's curious is the fact that Dr. Rush is back at Arkham after he said he quit, you know, to be with Sophia and be around her, and he's back there now. An interesting theory that I've read about is people believe that Rush is going to be this universe's Scarecrow, and it's going to be Jonathan Crane under an alias. I mean, some of the tricks he'd used in here, I mean, Bliss was originally medication they used in Arkham, and they re, you know, whatever did they did to it to make it more of a street drug. So, and he used the EDMR and stuff to get Francis to, you know, play out the trauma about that night and about the idea of killing her son. So maybe it could be Scarecrow. That'd be an interesting take, I think. I don't know. For me, Rush was such a non-factor other than being like a lovesick puppy for Sophia for whatever reason that I just don't find. I mean, the actor is tremendous. I've seen him in other stuff, but I don't know if I'd really want to see him as the Scarecrow, but hey, you never know. Another interesting thing that I've seen written is people think that there's been little hints here and there that the Court of Owls will show up in the Batman universe. That would be really interesting. Cool. I mean, you know, they've kind of already done like the whole class disparity and how the rich are richer and the poor are poorer. And like the divide is so huge. And like, you know, in the comics, the Court of Owls pretty much have run Gotham for centuries behind the scenes. That would be a cool take. I'm like, and as gritty and grounded as Matt Reeves' Batman universe is, that would be pretty sick to see the Court of Owls translated into this universe. So, you know, that would be cool. But again, yeah, like that final scene with him and his mom and the and Eve dressed up as her and all that and having her say, "Tell me you're proud of me, Ma." God, that was so unnerving. And it just showed how despicable and vile the Penguin in this universe really is and how he is going to be a serious threat in the future. They've already kind of said that he's sporadically in the Batman 2. Maybe he might have a bigger part in Batman 3, but there's talks that this might not be the end of the Penguin series. There might be a season 2, which, hey, I'm all for it. The show is so good that I would like to see more of, you know, Oz and him running the criminal underworld. And it also begs the question, I mean, I know some people would probably complain that, hey, we didn't get Batman with all this fighting going on with the Maronis, the Falcones, and Oz, and all this stuff. Like, where is Batman? Like, half a Crown Point got blown up. You would think he would be there, but, like, I don't know. Maybe his philosophy is also the fact that, hey, it's a gang war. Let them fight it out, and that's one less problem I gotta worry about. Or maybe he's preoccupied with something else that we might find out in Batman 2. That'll be interesting to see. But overall, the final episode's a 5 out of 5. The series is tremendous, phenomenal show. If it's one I would probably watch again and again, maybe, in the future. And it's up there, I think, in as far as prestige crime dramas are concerned. That's you know, it's going to be, for me, Breaking Bad, The Wire, and The Penguin. Are the Sopranos, you know. You can fight me on that, but it's my opinion. But from that, there's an article with Matt Reeves who talked about how he had a lot of concerns over creating a new Joker and how it would play into his universe. And it's a challenge to take such a character, an iconic character, and a character that's had a lot of great actors have runs at as the Joker, you know. I mean, Heath Ledger is probably the Joker when everyone thinks about great Joker actors. Jack Nicholson, you know, he was fun in the Burton franchise for what his role is. I gotta say, though, that extended scene, that cut scene between Batman and the Joker, played by Barry Keoghan, or Keoghan, whatever his name is. Sorry, brother, I'm butchering the name, but we'll go with Barry Keoghan. I was not a big fan of his take, especially in that extended scene with the Batman. Like, it was fine, a little teaser at the end with him and Riddler, kind of, but, like, I don't know. The way his speech, the way he acts as the Joker, I'm not a big fan of it. I hope that because they didn't get a real big glimpse at him in the first movie, that they may retool him if they're going to use him in this universe, because, quite frankly, I am Jokered out. I mean, I get it. He's the ultimate Batman villain, and that's the one that everyone associates as being the top villain for a Batman movie. And it's just, I don't know, man. We got so many other guys we could go with. You know, Dr. Hugo Strange, the Mad Hatter, hell, Deathstroke. I know he's more of a, I don't know. I mean, I know he's been using the Arrow, but, like, he's fought Batman a couple times. But that would be cool. I mean, they teased him being Ben Affleck's villain. That'd be cool to see him in the Batman universe have, like, a international assassin fighting Robert Pattinson's Batman. That'd be neat. But there's so many other guys and characters we can work with besides the Joker. I mean, I'm fine with him being around, but just not like a heavy focus, you know, a whole movie dedicated to him. I mean, we've got enough of that. I mean, hell, we've got two movies with Joaquin Phoenix, even though it's not really the Joker, it's Arthur Fleck, but whatever. You know, but yeah, I mean, I can understand his point. It's daunting to try to come up with something fresh, especially when there's been takes like Heath Ledger, and that's one that everyone thinks of, and you know, it's gonna be a hard one to top. And I mean, Jared Leto tried and did something. That's yeah, he did something. We'll go with that. He did something. Another little fun news, Amazon Prime is looking to do a Lara Croft television show. You know, a Tomb Raider show, and they found their Lara Croft, and it is going to be none other than Sophie Turner. That's an interesting choice, you know. I mean, Angelina Jolie had that, I guess, British flair. I don't think Angelina Jolie is even British, but, like, you know, Sophie Turner's done physical work before, you know, Game of Thrones and being in the X-Men series. So it'll be interesting to see her be Lara Croft in this series. I don't know when it's set to be released. I don't think they've even started filming yet. They're probably still working on scripts and whatnot, but, you know, I mean, well, as I'm looking at an article, it wasn't greenlit till May 2024, so I mean, there's still probably heavy development in it, and plus if they just casted her. So that'll be an interesting one. That's going to be one I'm going to look forward to. Like, I'm not a big Tomb Raider guy. Like, I've seen the Angelina Jolie movies. I haven't really played the game. I think I played, like, a demo version of it on PlayStation years ago. But, yeah, she could be fun. She's a great actress. So, no arguments there on that front. I'm going to wrap it up in a minute, though, but I'm going to talk about Radiant Black. I just finished reading The Catalyst War. Caught up. They've done an interesting thing where they released two issues in a month, and they were, like, numbered, like, 30 and 30.5, stuff like that, and they followed the two different guys who were the Radiant Black right now, Matthew and Nathan, two best friends, and the way the stories diverged in the two separate issues, I mean, there's certain panels that, I mean, certain things that happened exactly the same in both, slightly, but the way their stories diverge was really interesting and really unique, and, like, where one was really good at having other people help him, the other one was like, no, this is my test, I gotta do it all by myself, and more stringent, and they both made fatal mistakes that cost a lot of people or, you know, jeopardized the whole universe, because the whole thing was the premiere, as the villain was called, the part of the Catalyst race, they want the Radiants were theirs, and they want it back, and, like, in order for them to save Earth and all that, they had to go through three different series of tests, and yeah, man, it was so good. I wasn't expecting it. I thought it was going to be like, oh, it's going to be the exact same thing in a certain pages, and then they're going to divert a little bit, and it's going to be all the same thing. No, they went wildly different directions, and they kind of intersected in one issue where, I don't want to give all it away, because that I feel like everyone should read that. It's really unique how they did this. You know, one of the guys acted way out of character than what you would thought or how they've been portrayed. And it was really unique. And then when, like, the other universe person showed up and saw what that universe version of themselves did, they were in shock and like, no, why would I do this? I can't let this happen. This can't be me. This isn't me, right? And like freaking out and stuff. That was really unique spin. It's like, okay, does that mean that the other guy is gonna become Radiant Black now? Or, you know, what? You didn't really know. And it never really showed its hand, I feel. So it was a lot of fun reading, and I'm on the fence about who became the Radiant Black. I mean, it makes sense story-wise, and, you know, they were great about that and how they shifted focus, how you thought it was going to be Marshall in the beginning. You figured since he found it, he was going to be the Radiant, and then he ends up getting hurt, and then Nathan takes it over. So that was a great subversion, and this story, The Catalyst War, did not disappoint. It lived up to the hype. I can't wait to see how the story goes now with this new arc in February, because they take a couple of months off, and I'm sure that was a difficult process to write two books and release them at the same time and then be radically different stories, but like the same and all the same thing. You know what I mean? I know, I don't understand why it took a lot of time to get this arc over with, and there were delays or times of months where issues weren't being released, but it was a good read. And Kyle Higgins, man, I think Kyle Higgins has become my favorite writer in comics as of, like, you know, going right now, at least. So yeah, man, you should check it out, the whole thing. I know there's the big compendium book coming out, or it has been released. It has issues 1 through 12. That's really fun. You know, go out and get them. It's one of the best comic books going today, especially as an independent comic. Like, again, if you like Invincible, you're going to love this book. Or even if you're just, if you want something different from what the big two would normally do, this is the book for you. I can't wait for the audiobook. I really want it to become a television series. I think that'd be really cool. Hopefully one day we get that. Either Amazon Prime, you know, brother, or Netflix, somebody. Kyle Higgins, get on that. That'd be cool. You know, I mean, you're doing an audiobook. Maybe that's one step closer to us getting either an animated. Animation's probably going to be the way to go instead of live action. Low live action would be really cool as a movie franchise or something, but you never know with these things. But yeah, no, The Catalyst War, again, so good. Check it out. I recommend it. That is all for this week. Again, I apologize for not having an episode out last week. We're going to be back to our regular scheduled Friday releases. Be sure to follow the podcast at Vegas World Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Follow me at the JC Vega on most social media platforms. If you want to support me, go to ProWrestlingTees.com and buy some of my shirts. Thank you all for tuning in. I love each and every one of you. Have a good week.